So here, we're going to start by reading the passage together. We're at the very end of Mark's gospel, Mark chapter 16, verses 1 to 8. There is an addendum at the end of the gospel, but it's not found in the earliest manuscripts. I'm not sure whether or not I'll teach through it or not. At this point, Mark seems to end where Mark, the original author, he seems to have ended the gospel here in these last remaining 8 verses. And this is all about the resurrection of Jesus. The entire gospel comes down to this, 8 verses at the end of the resurrection of Jesus. And this is the shortest, obviously, because Mark's gospel, it's the shortest account of the resurrection. But these are the 8 verses. And because the resurrection is such an important event, I think I'm actually going to spend a couple of citywides working through this, looking at it from different angles. And that will take us through to summer, and then in the fall, we'll start in a new series, which I have in my mind already coming out of this. But for today, we're going to stick with Mark 16, 1 to 8. So I want you to stand up. We're going to read it all together. And we'll probably read it a couple of times through. And then we'll see what we need to look at for today. Beginning, when the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so that they might go to anoint Jesus' body. Very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb, and they asked each other, "Who will roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb?" But when they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in white robe, sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. "Don't be alarmed," he said. "You're looking for Jesus the Nazarene, who was crucified. He is risen. He's not here. See the place where they laid him. But go, tell his disciples and Peter. He is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you." Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. So I have one thought that was on my heart for today that I wanted to talk about. But before I go on, I want to hear from you. What, this time reading through this passage, was there something that stood out to you as you read through it? I might use it as fodder for the next teaching. Go ahead, Johnny. Right, yeah. Isn't that great? Yeah, people love that. Yeah. Okay. Mm. Right. A reason. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Side. Right. Yeah. That's good. Okay. Ruth. Okay. Yeah, well, interesting. Okay, so maybe we'll look at that. I'm going to show a picture of the tomb in a moment, but according to Mark's version. Oh, okay. Sure. Right, okay, good. Peter, tell the story. Okay, good, okay. What else? Anything else from you that you want to add in? Stood out to you this time as being unique? Huh. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, of course. Yeah. I think we would too, wouldn't we? Yeah. Well, let me dig in a little bit as to what I wanted to talk about. So in the opening verse of Mark's gospel, I'll take you all the way back to Mark chapter 1, verse 1. We're at the end of the gospel. Now here we are at the beginning. It says, "The beginning of the good news about Jesus Christ, the Son of God." So what's happening here, right at the very beginning of the gospel, is that Mark is letting us in on a secret that he knows about. He tells us, right, that Jesus is the Christ. He, or another way of saying that, is that he's the Messiah, that he's the King of the Jews, that he is the Son of God, and that he says that this is good news. I tell you, it's the beginning, the good news of Jesus the Christ, the Son of God. Now, I say that it's a secret because as soon then, after we get beyond the preamble, where Mark kind of gives us his opening information about what he sees is happening here, as soon as we get the gospel begins, we encounter that all of the characters don't know any of what Mark has just said here in the opening. Mark knows it because he's writing a biography, right? He's borrowing the thoughts from Peter, and he's writing this biography, and as the biographer, he has the power of hindsight to look back, and kind of, he acts almost like this all-knowing guide that leads us through in our understanding of who Jesus is. But the other characters in the story, as soon as the story begins, and as it goes the whole way through the gospel, everybody, the reality is, they don't know any of this, and in fact, they're actually really confused about who Jesus is and what his character, or what his nature is. So here's a couple of examples. Look at the questions that they ask throughout the gospel. They say, what is this? A new teaching, and with authority, he commands the unclean spirits and they obey him. Why does this fellow speak this way? It's blasphemy. Who can forgive sins but God alone? Why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners? Who then is this, that even the wind and the sea obey him? Where did this man get all this? What is this wisdom that's been given to him? What deeds of power are being done by his hands? Isn't this the carpenter? I love this line. Isn't this the carpenter, the son of Mary, and the brother of James, and Joseph, and Judas, and Simon? There's the brothers of Jesus, if you ever wondered their name. And we're not his sisters with this? Yeah, Jesus had sisters as well. More questions go on throughout the gospel. By what authority are you doing this? Who gave you this authority to do these things? It's a big thing for them. Like, who said that you can be doing this and acting this way? Until finally then, at the trial of Jesus, the questions are asked by him. Are you the Messiah? Are you the Son of God? Are you the King of the Jews? Right? Who are you? These are the questions. Everybody is confused about him. It's not just in the questions that are asked about him that the confusion comes out, though, because you also see it in the titles that they give to Jesus. There's all sorts of different names that people refer to Jesus by throughout the Gospel of Mark. In some places, like in the passage we just read, he's referred to just as Jesus of Nazareth. Some places, as we saw there in the list of them, he's referred to as the carpenter. Teacher, that's the most common name that people refer to Jesus by in the Gospel. There's Rabbi, there's Messiah, there's Prophet, there's Lord, there's Master, there's Son of David. Son of David is spoken by blind Bartimaeus on the side of the road, calls out to him. It's, Son of David, have mercy on me. And then I didn't include it here, actually, I should have, because then last time we were together here in St. Agnes, you remember that the guard then at the very end cries out and says, surely this must be the Son of God. But these are the extent of the titles that people use of Jesus throughout the gospel. And the titles, as you see here, they're really all over the map. Right? They're from the real prosaic, like just, he's Jesus from the town of Nazareth, or he's a carpenter. And then you can see it begins to be elevated. Well, he's a teacher. And then there's also some rabbi. And finally, you can kind of come into this Messiah. He's the Messiah, this King of the Jews. But as I've tried to teach many times throughout the gospel, this expression Messiah, or in Greek, Christ, the King of the Jews, for the people in the time, it was a very earthen title. And by that I mean, like, it was just like the King of the Jews was for them like a man like David, a great leader, a great hero that was going to come and deliver them like David was. But there wasn't anything sort of beyond that in a grand, lofty sense. It was a very, as I say, obviously a venerated title, but not of a, you know, of the divine title or something like that. Now, here we are then, the final story of the gospel. And we watch this really beautiful, intimate scene as these three women make their way to this man's tomb that they've been confused about themselves, their life. And Mark, I don't know if you notice this, and maybe I'll pull this out in the teaching in the following weeks. Mark really wants us to know that it's a tomb that they're going to. You notice that four times he says in there, he's going to the tomb, the tomb, the tomb, the tomb. And the women, we learn, are on their way very early in the morning to anoint his body. He's dead, Jesus is, from their perspective. It's a really special, tender scene. The women, they loved this man. They loved him. And obviously, for obvious reasons, he treated them in a way that men didn't treat women. And the women loved him so much that they were willing to risk their lives at the very end and be the ones that stood at the cross at the foot of Jesus while he was dying and all that meant. But here they are, these women that love him so much, and they're making their way on this Sabbath to attend to to what they understood to be his decomposing body. Jesus was, to be sure, right? He was unlike any man that they had ever known before. And yet, at the end of the day, he was still a man. Tomb, 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 dead, anointed body, buying spices. That's what he was. And that's what they were anticipating when they went to the crowd or went to the tomb that morning. But as we know, the story, I think most of you, if not all of you, have heard this story many times. When he gets to the tomb, they see this young man standing there or sitting there guarding, and they discover that the stone that's been covering the tomb has been rolled away, right? Which we saw in the story. They were wondering, like, who's going to roll this stone away? Mark, you were the one that drew that out. But they arrive inside, and there's this man who is a young man sitting on the right side, and he says to them right away, don't be afraid. Which, of course, it's like, well, I mean, the thing is that this was the tip-off that this is an angel here, because every time the angels appear, what is it that they say, right? Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. It's Mark's way of letting us know the man's dressed in white, but he's one of these don't be afraid guys. But everybody's afraid, and the ladies are terribly afraid, and now even more so because they look and Jesus' body is gone. And let me show you a picture of a tomb. Sorry, it's getting bright here. It's better in the wintertime when it's dark. But I took this picture when I was in Jerusalem a number of years ago. It is a tomb, an ancient tomb, a rich person's tomb that they unearthed, excavated, hewn into the side of a rock. You can see the entrance to it. And this here is the channel along which the round stone would roll to cover it. And you can see here, this little channel here is what the stone stayed in. It's the track in which the stone would roll back and forth. Now, I included this little picture over here as well, because this is the model of the tomb on the outside of it. There's this main chamber. This over here is where the body would lay, and it says on the right side. So I'm assuming that the angel then is sitting over here as they go in looking for the body that Jesus is missing. I don't know. I haven't done enough study on that side of things. Maybe there's something more being said about that, giving the identity, the location of where he's sitting. But this is where Jesus has been placed. And as I say, I've said in the past, the bodies don't stay in here in perpetuity, right? They're there for a while until their body decomposes, and then someone goes and collects the bones, and they put the bones in a box, and they bury the box. But this is what the story is. And from inside this tomb, then, this man, here he asks the question. And it's the question that just this week, when I was studying for today, just glowed off the page to me. I don't know that I've ever really before lingered on it or thought about it, but it's the question then that's going to form the rest of the teaching. He asks the question, are you looking for Jesus of Nazareth? Are you looking for Jesus of Nazareth? The one that was crucified. I'll say that again. Are you looking for Jesus of Nazareth? The one that was crucified. And then he goes on. What does he say as he adds on to that? No, before that, he's not here. He's not here anymore. He's risen. He's gone to the Galilee just like he told you. Now, when I read that question, it was just like, as I say, just something just stirring in me. What do you see what's happening here? The angel in this one question, it's like, for these three ladies, their vision, remember who they are. They're a part of this confused group of people wondering, who is Jesus? They loved him, but they... And there's this one question. It's like the angel now is upgrading their vision. He's increasing and expanding their understanding of who Jesus is. He's trying to help them see what Mark told us way back in the beginning of the gospel in Mark chapter 1, verse 1. You're here to see Jesus of Nazareth. You're here to see the Nazarene. You're here to see the carpenter. You're here to see the prophet. You're here to see the teacher. You're here to see the rabbi. You're here to see the Messiah. You're here to see that guy. Are you here to see the one that died on Good Friday? Is that the one you're here to see? Because you need to know something about that one. You need to see him for who he is. It's time that you lift up your eyes. This one that you're here to see is alive. There's something special in this one. You see this? There's more than just Jesus of Nazareth. The scene is saying to us, Jesus is the one from Nazareth, but he now we must contend with is more than just Jesus of Nazareth. He's the one that has overcome death. He's the one that is alive. He's alive. The angel is expanding their mind as to who they've always understood Jesus to be. I want you to help you understand this even further. Let me show you something that's the way the gospel has been written. Mark 16:6. This section here that I've just highlighted for us. It includes the last name for Jesus in the gospel. The last time Jesus is mentioned by a character in the gospel is in this section, Mark 16, verse 6. The first time it's used by someone other than the narrator, Mark, is in Mark chapter 1, verse 24. And in both cases, the same name is used in both of those places. Mark 1:24, Mark 16, verse 6, in both cases, at the beginning of the gospel, at the end of the gospel, the name Jesus of Nazareth is used for Jesus. Now, linking an opening story or an opening reference to a closing story or a closing reference is a literary device. It's called, as you see up there on the screen, it's called an inclusio. And it was a very common way of writing in ancient literature, but it's common today. It's one of those things that is carried on today, right? When you read a story, oftentimes there's something that's here at the beginning and then later on here at the end. They do this as a way. And the reason is the literary device is to connect an opening thought or an opening reference to a closing thought in order to complete something. It's done in order to give the reader kind of like, oh, I remember that, and a bit of like a aha, like, oh, yes, I remember what they were saying back then, and now, oh, and it all is making sense to me. That's what the inclusio is trying to do, create this aha moment. So the first time the title is used in Mark chapter 1, verse 24, it takes place in a synagogue. It's the first real story of Jesus. He arrives into this synagogue. And there in the synagogue is a man that is possessed by an evil spirit. He's possessed by a demon. And the demon, what does the demon do? It shrieks out, "What do you want with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." Now, all of that confusion, that wandering through the gospel, now we come to the end, the other inclusio, in 16 verse 6, and this time the title is used again, Jesus of Nazareth, but this time it's an angel. The first time was a demon. This time is an angel. And in the story, he's helping these women to understand what the demon knew all along. This isn't just Jesus of Nazareth. This is something else. This is the Holy One of God. This is the one who stands in the face of death and rises again. This is the one that is alive. See, Mark, at the end of the gospel, is bringing a conclusion for us, and he's wanting us as the reader to know what the demon made known in the opening story. Jesus is of Nazareth. Yes. He is a prophet. Yes. He is the Messiah. Yes. He is a carpenter. Yes. But he is also the Holy One of God that stands above death and Hades. That's what he's trying to do. Let me ask you the question. It's the question that I think needs to be asked, and I've been thinking about this week, is that when you come to Jesus yourself, who is it that you're looking for? When you come to Jesus, when you think about Jesus, when you pray to Jesus, when you worship Jesus, when you sing songs about Jesus, who is it that you are looking for? Do we come with Jesus of Nazareth, Jesus the teacher, Jesus the rabbi, Jesus the carpenter, Jesus the guide, Jesus, he's all of those things. But what Mark is wanting us to know is that when we come to Jesus, we also need to come with the understanding that this one is not just Jesus of Nazareth, but he is also the Holy One of God. The Holy One of God, the one who stands above death, the one who is alive. This is the one that stands in the middle of us. This past weekend, before I go on, let me just ask you, do you have a question about that or a thought, something that you can add to contribute to that? This past weekend, the leaders of our churches, we all went away for a leadership retreat. We spent the whole time in Revelation. Revelation is built around seven visions of Jesus. And if you're wondering where we're going to go in the fall, that's the direction I think we're going to go. We're going to spend the rest of, or the next season of time looking at the seven visions from Revelation of Jesus. Our church has this slogan, our vision is Jesus. So let's see the vision of Jesus from Revelation. Anyway, this past weekend, we spent this time looking at Revelation chapter 1. In Revelation 1, there is the first vision of Jesus. John is on the island of Patmos. He's in prison there because of him pastoring these seven churches of Asia Minor in the area of Turkey. He's in prison, and while there, he has this vision, and it is this vision of who Jesus is. And I want to read the vision for us here. But before I do, just what I shared with them on that weekend, or last weekend, the leaders last weekend. Revelation is written, it's called apocalyptic literature. And apocalyptic means unveiling or revealing, hence the name Revelation. And what's being unveiled here, or what's being revealed for us, is it's like the veil is being pulled back beyond the material for us to see what is in the cosmos, what is in the heavenlies, right? Unveiling, what's being unveiled is Jesus and the angelic realm. And as I shared this past weekend, the thing about Revelation is that it's wanting us to see and believe that what's beyond the veil is what's really real. That's an expression from Daryl Johnson, who's a pastor in Vancouver, that this is the really real. In our world of you know, bricks and mortar and wood, and we're constantly being taught that all that there is what we can see and feel and touch. And what Revelation is trying to do is it's trying to unveil to us and says to us, oh, but there is so much more than what you can see or imagine. Do you have eyes to see? But when John has this vision, the first thing that's unveiled to him is an image of Jesus. And this is what he sees. I, John, your brother and companion in the suffering and the kingdom and patient endurance that are ours in Jesus, was on the island of Patmos because of the word of God and the testimony of Jesus. On the Lord's day, I was in the Spirit, and I heard behind me a loud voice like a trumpet, which said, write on a scroll what you see and send it to the seven churches. I turned around to see the voice that was speaking to me, and when I turned, I saw seven golden lampstands, and among the lampstands was someone dressed, or someone like a son of man, dressed. I'm not going to read the part later on, but the seven golden lampstands are identified later as the seven churches that John pastors. So Jesus is standing then among, he's in the middle of these seven churches. He's dressed in a robe reaching down to his feet with a golden sash around his chest.